Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
From the BBC World Service, welcome to the documentary, the home of original storytelling. I'm Adam Fleming, and this is a bonus episode from the Global Story podcast, looking at one big story in detail every weekday. In this episode, the US government is in the process of suing some of the biggest tech companies on the planet: Apple, Google, Amazon, and the social media giant Meta. Washington says they've created monopolies over the technology that now controls many aspects of our everyday life. And there is one woman who's fast becoming the face of this battle.
Please welcome to the program Federal Trade Commission Chair Lina Khan.
The millennial, Asian, British-born lawyer Lina Khan is leading a crackdown on Silicon Valley that could force major changes to how those companies work. Today we're asking, who is the woman taking on America's biggest billionaires? And is she winning? Well, with me here in the studio is James Clayton, who works for the BBC in London, but until very recently was our North American tech reporter based in Silicon Valley. Welcome back, James.
Hello, Adam. Thanks for inviting me in.
Down the line from Washington is our North America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury. Hello, Michelle.
Hello from Washington, D.C.
James, what is the really simple way of understanding what antitrust is?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a monopoly. I mean, it's like if you held all the sweets in the world, you could charge anything you liked for your sweets, right? And the whole purpose of capitalism is that there are lots of people that sell sweets. And as a result, there's a sort of competition for those prices and the price of sweets comes down. And that's how capitalism and markets are supposed to work. The reason why we talk about antitrust is this concept is from the early 20th century, when a lot of American companies, kind of trusts, held huge amounts of sway and power over industries, in particular the railroads, oil. And because of that lack of competition, they could charge kind of what they wanted for the things that they were selling. And a lot of politicians got angry about this. It was hurting consumers. And a whole antitrust movement sprang up. So it's about trusts as in companies rather than trust as in to trust someone.
James, let's go from 1924 to 2024. And the superstar these days is Lina Khan, who is boss of the Federal Trade Commission. Just give us a little kind of pen portrait of who she is.
Yeah, sure. So Lina Khan, until relatively recently, was a student.
I got really deep into researching how it was that on the one hand, we had all of these laws that were designed to prevent the exact situation that we were now confronting.
So Lina Khan was doing a PhD at Yale. And then in 2017, she published this report that I didn't really think she thought at the time would go viral, but it did. And it was about Amazon.
And it was in the Yale Law Review, wasn't it?
Right. But it ended up getting a lot of attention. And the reason for that was she was sort of reimagining what antitrust might be and essentially saying that Amazon, rather than it be this really popular, brilliant platform that was great for consumers, was actually hurting consumers.
I think it's worth interrogating what we mean when we say Amazon is efficient. There's one thing that's operational efficiency, and then there's another thing when it's basically just increased bargaining power over retailers, over brands, and over third-party merchants.
If there are these big tech companies that are dominating a sector, is that good for consumers? Is it good for choice? And actually, if we were to introduce more competition into the sector, would it be better for consumers? Now, that's a really difficult argument to make, because essentially what you're saying is this isn't necessarily harming consumers in a sort of monetary way right now. But if it wasn't operating like this, it would actually be better for you. There'd be more choice. There'd be more products. You'd have a better experience. And that is a difficult sell, but that's what she was articulating, and it caught this interest from a lot of academia.
And Michelle, what was the story that then led to her being so important in the Biden administration?
Well, what happens is she goes out of university. She starts to go into government. She takes a low-level job at the FTC. After that, she goes ultimately to become a professor. And that's the point at which Joe Biden wins the election and taps her to become one of the members of the board at the Federal Trade Commission, one of the sort of key big US enforcers of antitrust law. And then surprisingly, within hours of her nomination being approved, she was announced as the head of that committee. And that really sent a tremor through Washington, D.C., where I am, through lobbyists and through companies, as they started to think, well, is she going to suddenly start to bring this case against Amazon? And I think that's what everyone was watching in her first sort of 12 months in the job. Everyone was waiting to see what she would do and when and if she would bring that case.
And James, just as a little sidebar, what do we know about her as a person? Is she one of these type A superachievers who gets up at 4 a.m., goes to the gym for 2 hours, can horse ride, scuba dive, like lots of CEOs these days?
You definitely get that impression.
I'm not asking you to go through her daily schedule in 15-minute chunks.
She definitely has high standards. And I think there has been some pushback internally in the FTC that when she came in, there was sort of a view that perhaps they weren't as efficient, as aggressive as they could have been. And Lina Khan, clearly incredibly ambitious. I mean, she was 32 when she got made head of the Federal Trade Commission. I mean, it's incredibly young. The problem is that she hasn't really had very many successes. And it's been, what, nearly 3 years now since she took over. So very ambitious, but at the moment, not a lot to show for it.
And we'll come on to some of her wins and losses in a second. But Michelle, one of the things that explains her record of wins and losses is actually just the structure of how antitrust works in the US. The FTC, the Trade Commission, is only one body of several which gets to dip an oar into this pond.
Yeah, and of course the other, as you're sort of alluding to there, is the Department of Justice. And there's another figure who's kind of leading the charge, if you like, slightly overshadowed by Lina Khan, but still a very prominent figure, and that's Jonathan Kanter. He's kind of the head of the antitrust division there.
I love my job, and I love the people I work with. And the issues confronting us today are more complex, more burdensome, and more widespread, perhaps, than any time in 100 years in the antitrust world.
And he's taken a very similar approach and shares, clearly, Lina Khan's philosophy, which is this sort of new, much broader view of what bringing these types of cases should be. Some of it has been successful, some of it has not, but they certainly have kind of stirred up the waters of antitrust policy, and in legal circles, they are today's rock stars of that sort of legal world.
Right, now let's move on and talk about some of the individual claims and allegations against individual companies. Let's start with Apple.
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple antitrust cases against Apple. The most kind of like obvious one is that Apple runs its own app store. That is very heavily criticized for being antitrust, a monopoly. You can't sideload other apps. You have to go through the app store.
If you make a purchase on one of those apps you've downloaded from the app store, Apple gets a cut of that purchase.
Exactly. So generally, yes, you have to pay quite a large part of your revenue to Apple just for being able to be on the app store. The accusations here are that just by owning this massive real estate in the App Store, for example, that gives Apple a huge advantage, an unfair advantage over other companies. And it also means there's just not a competition. So if you're a maker of a game and you don't like Apple's tariff, where else do you go? Well, the only other place you can go is Android, to essentially Google, because they make the operating system for all the other phones in the world. And what critics will say is that's just not enough competition. There needs to be more competition. And because there isn't enough competition, Apple can charge what it likes.
I mean, I think Apple, the troubles just keep piling up because it was the Department of Justice and Jonathan Kanter who just brought a case the other week. And that lawsuit argued that it violated antitrust laws, things like the fact that when it comes to messaging people on phones that aren't an iPhone, you get these kind of green bubbles with the three dots and the experience isn't as seamless. And one of the things listed in the filing against Apple was an exchange between Tim Cook, the current CEO of Apple, and a member of the audience at an event where he was speaking, where the person in the audience was complaining that his mum was having problems with texting someone who wasn't on an iPhone. And Tim Cook said, well, you just have to get her an iPhone. And I think that was the kind of evidence that the Justice Department was saying, well, look, there is an example of ways in which, rather than trying to simplify the product and make it work better for consumers, they were choosing to kind of have this walled garden approach where it's essentially harder for outsiders to come in.
Right, Michelle, which big tech company should we look at next? You get to choose.
Oh, Amazon.
Okay.
It's got to be Amazon. The Federal Trade Commission and 17 states have sued the giant, basically saying that it has a monopoly over huge swathes of online retail.
The U.S. antitrust laws prohibit firms from using their monopoly power to punish or preclude or prevent competition. And that's what our lawsuit lays out that Amazon has done. The consequences of that are very serious for sellers who now pay one out of every $2 to Amazon. So this is effectively a 50% tax.
So when you become the dominant platform or gatekeeper, however you want to describe it, you in some ways get to set the terms. And not just that, but also now it's, for example, designing its own clothes and machine parts. So it now has the data of some of the companies that are using the Amazon platform to sell their goods. And now they can kind of use that information when they're trying to make their own competing products. So that's the kind of behavior that they're saying makes it harder for smaller rivals to take advantage of the platform. And then that's where the consumer comes in, the sort of loss to the consumer is that you don't get that thriving marketplace that we should have.
Those of you who use Amazon, so much of the product you buy will be based on which is the first product on the first page. And now often there are products that's probably enough to fill 50 pages. You're not going to go to page 49 of all of those products to find the best one. You just don't have the bandwidth.
And lots of the time they're sponsored.
Right.
Basically, so, they're adverts.
Right. So it's either sponsored or Amazon can, if it doesn't like you, can put you way down the algorithm. And in that way, should we be giving Amazon that much power? In that algorithm, favor its own products over others? And if it is, that's a really clear conflict of interest.
James, we're all quite familiar with the arguments about Meta. What are they doing with our data? What are they doing about misinformation and disinformation? Maybe people think less about actually what's it doing as a company vis-a-vis other companies.
The main accusation against Meta from an antitrust perspective is that it owns so many huge social media networks. So it owns Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, obviously. Facebook Messenger is also massive. The main accusation is, should one company own so many of these social media platforms with so many users? And the big one is, should they have been allowed to have bought Instagram for $1 billion? It's now worth a lot more than that. Should it have been allowed to have bought WhatsApp for $19 billion. I think a lot of people in Silicon Valley will say, okay, that's fine, but it was never preordained that these companies were going to be quite as successful as they are now. You know, they bought Instagram for $1 billion. That's nothing in Silicon Valley. So there is an argument that Facebook made these companies what they are. And really, from an antitrust perspective, it is much harder to launch the argument that there is a clear-cut case of a monopoly there on Facebook than others. So that is definitely a feeling in Silicon Valley, that if you're going to get one of these companies, Meta is probably the hardest.
And Michelle, are you seeing it being a case of Mark Zuckerberg, founder, boss of Meta, versus Lina Khan? Is that the battle that's playing out?
I mean, he certainly had a few skirmishes with her. But I think the current running through all of this is the idea that these are gatekeepers, and that, yes, it wasn't evident at the beginning when they were just starting, these sort of fledglings. Google, for example, started in a garage in Silicon Valley. You know, it wasn't evident they would become these huge giants.
Michelle said the G word, Google. James, what's Google got to do with all of this?
If you were a lawyer and you were going to try and choose one case you thought you had the best chance of winning, I would say Google is your best bet. 90% plus of all of the searches in the world are on Google. And as a result of that, it really does have a huge monopoly over search. I mean, it's just there's no way of getting around that.
But what does it do with that monopoly? Because surely if you just do a search on the internet, you just get the results, don't you?
Yeah, right. Well, you don't. You get adverts. You get a lot of adverts. And people pay an obscene amount of money to advertise to be the first thing that comes up. And actually, you know, in a perfect search engine, there would be an algorithm that is put together that is the most relevant thing, the thing that you are looking for comes up first. That is not the case with Google. And what people will say in terms of that is, if there was more competition, Google wouldn't be able to advertise as much on Google search. And as a result of that, you might get a better product. So essentially, there is not enough competition in search. If you look at around the world, Google has already been fined for this practice. On top of that, Google runs the Android operating system, and it has exactly the same accusations of antitrust level to it that Apple does with the App Store too. So you have two, not one, but two really pretty solid cases.
This is going to take a long, long time to be resolved. I mean, the only way it would shorten is if both sides suddenly reach some kind of settlement, but that does not seem to be on the cards here. And so in that time, if you're looking at a period of maybe 5-10 years, a lot can change. And we've seen that before in the case of Microsoft in the 90s, when it was, you know, the dominant operating software, and it had a case brought against it by the Department of Justice. And ultimately, its reputation was damaged. It sort of lost some of its dominance, but it is still around today and it is still a huge company. And it is also, interestingly, one of the people who testified in one of the cases against Google.
James, put us into the minds of the people you used to hang out with in Silicon Valley all the time, the entrepreneurs, the people that dream up these ideas, the people that risk quite a lot of money on things that quite often fail.
Well, big tech would say that these are some of the most successful American companies in history, and you are deliberately targeting American companies in a way that it is in itself anti-American. And they will say that these companies are the bedrock of places like Silicon Valley. Like, so much investment within Silicon Valley itself will come from some of these huge companies. So, you know, they will say that far from us being damaging to market forces and capitalism, we are a key components of that, and we should be proud of their achievements rather than trying to regulate them. Now, what you'll also get in Silicon Valley is a lot of people saying, I would love for Google to get regulated more, Apple to get regulated more, because then there might be more competition and our startup might have a better chance of maybe creating a great new search engine. But generally, what people in big tech will say is they don't quite get why the Democrats are so anti-big tech.
So we've looked at who Lina Khan is and why she's taking on the big technology companies. Next, let's look at what that means for you and me, the consumer. If you're enjoying this episode and would like to hear more, search The Global Story wherever you found this podcast.
Hallo, hier sind Julia und Chris vom Podcast Drinnies. Wir machen nicht nur einen Comedy-Podcast, sondern gehen auch leidenschaftlich gerne nicht zu Stoßzeiten in den Supermarkt. Ehrlich gesagt bleibe ich am liebsten ganz zu Hause und ziehe nur eine Hose an, wenn es klingelt. Wenn es euch auch so geht, dann ist HelloFresh genau das Richtige für euch. Der Kochbox-Lieferservice bringt euch frische, abwechslungsreiche Gerichte direkt vor die Haustür, die ihr im Handumdrehen selbst zubereiten könnt.
Und mit dem Code LECKER24 könnt ihr jetzt richtig sparen. In Deutschland bis zu 120 Euro, in Österreich bis zu 130 Euro und in der Schweiz bis zu 140 Franken. Also Code LECKER24 eingeben und sparen.
PS, der panierte Portobello-Pilz mit Sweet Chili Ketchup ist sehr gut.
This is The Global Story. We bring you one big international story in detail 5 days a week. Follow or subscribe wherever you listen. With me right now is our North American business correspondent, Michelle Fleury, who's in Washington, D.C., and our former North American tech reporter, James Clayton, who's based here in London. Now, what do these cases against big tech mean for the people that actually use the services, a.k.a. you and me?
Yeah, sure. I mean, let's talk about Apple, for example. So Apple is really famous for having incredibly innovative product launches.
This is one device And we are calling it iPhone.
The iPad, the iPod, I could go on. Yet for the last nearly 15 years, it basically has launched no product that has been particularly innovative. That's not my view. That is like the general view in tech. That's partly because Apple has been able to make incredible profits with the technology that it already has. So it has just bashed out a new iPhone every year for the last few years. And the iPhone 13 looks remarkably like the iPhone 14. I'm sure the iPhone 15, iPhone 16, iPhone 17 will all look very, very similar. But a lot of people will just buy that iPhone, not because they necessarily love Apple, but because it's connected to their computer. It's like they're used to all of the apps, etc. And so there is a view that if there was genuinely more competition, there would be better products on the market and Apple would be forced to provide more innovative products. So the issue is you've got to convince the public, hey, I know you really like this product now, but you could be having a better one with a different a set of regulations. And that's the really hard bit, because if you go back to the initial concept of what antitrust was, it was you are getting poorer because of this. And that's kind of not really what we're talking about here, although iPhones are extremely expensive.
Well, I'm just thinking with my iPhone in my pocket right now, it's got all my photos since 2009 on it, except it doesn't. They're on the iCloud, for which I pay a monthly fee. And I actually, as a user, don't know how I get my photos off iCloud.
Your phone is a massive cash cow to Apple. They could give you the phone for free and still make loads of money off you. Have Apple, you know, the most valuable company in the world, got there because of incredible innovation? Yes. Has it been incredibly innovative recently? No. What Apple will say is, we are an innovative company and we are now living off and getting very, very wealthy off some great products. And why shouldn't we do that?
And Michelle, does Lina Khan and her boss, ultimately Joe Biden, do they ever put forward a vision for the ideal utopia for us as consumers, if everything that they want to do comes to pass?
I mean, I think they're taking a much broader view than just the consumer and price. I think they're thinking about workers. If you don't have a thriving competitive market, does that mean workers end up getting paid less? If the next Google or Meta or Amazon or Apple doesn't come to pass because there wasn't, you know, a thriving competitive market, that's what they're trying to think about. But the risk for the consumer is that in their pursuit of that, they may end up with what techies like to call more friction. So in the case of the iPhone, a lot of people are willing to pay that premium price associated with the product because there is a sort of simplicity of use compared to other phones. And in the same vein, when you're talking about Google and search, if you wanted to try and remedy the problems there and address the issue of search, would it make the kind of ease of use for the consumer as seamless as it currently is?
And Michelle, I'm glad you used that word remedy, because that's the technical word they use for these antitrust cases. But I'm just wondering what potential remedies could look like and have looked like in the past. Like, what actual tools, James, have these trade guys got at their disposal?
I mean, the ultimate tool is breaking up the company.
Saying to Meta, you've got to sell Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think anyone in Silicon Valley takes that threat seriously, but that has been absolutely a threat that has been articulated, by the way, by the Biden administration. So that absolutely is there. You know, in reality, you're talking about fines that would really hurt. And, you know, you're talking about companies with collective revenue of over $1 trillion. So it has to be really, really seriously meaty fines. At the same time, if you've got the US doing it and you've got the UK doing it and you've got Australia doing it, India starts to do it in Brazil and all of the big markets for these companies, those really start racking up. So although, you know, there is this idea that you could break up the companies, most people involved in those companies don't think that's going to happen. And they think the fines will probably need to go away. And if they do have to pay them, they might have to pay them, but it'll be in the years to come.
And Michelle, I suppose, I mean, all of this ends up in court because it's the American legal system. Of course it does. But the way that you counteract or change the legal system is by changing the law, by getting Congress to pass legislation or the White House signing an executive order where the president says the law has changed. Are there moves afoot to change the law and to give people like Lina Khan kind of bigger, more powerful weapons?
Look, I mean, interestingly, ever since the pandemic, when a lot of these companies, you know, we all relied on them when we were sort of stuck at home, they've grown in dominance, their revenues grew massively. And I think that seemed to unite a typically divided Washington. So you had lawmakers, whether it's Elizabeth Warren from the Democrats.
A giant company like Amazon owns an online marketplace, a chain of grocery stores, and a payments platform. Is that combination a risk for consumers?
Josh Hawley from the Republicans suddenly united against big tech. But despite this bipartisan concern, the kind of ability to legislate, as we've seen in Washington, is pretty tricky right now. And that is also the case when it comes to tech. And so when they have tried to sort of bring up bills to be turned into law, they haven't gone very far. They sort of died at each turn. And that really has left the work of this all to fall on the shoulders of the antitrust enforcers.
If Biden is re-elected for a second term, Michelle, does this work carry on and we just get more of the same? Or actually, could he go in a different direction? And then if Trump is re-elected for a second term, does he rip all of this up and just let the companies do what they want? What's your take?
Well, so here's the interesting thing. I think if Biden wins a second term, then Lina Khan, Jonathan Kander continue their work at their respective agencies. The cases move forward. I think if Donald Trump gets in, it gets interesting because he brought some of these cases under his tenure. The personnel might change, but the ramping up of pressure on big technology doesn't go away. It's just the shape of it, what it would look like, will be different. And I certainly think perhaps figures like the Chamber of Commerce here in America, who've become increasingly concerned about how figures like Lina Khan are interpreting the law, and what that does for the kind of corporate sector. I think they might feel some relief to see a change of personnel. But in terms of for these companies, the pressure will remain.
And James, while we're talking about political records, I mean, what will Lina Khan's record be when people come to assess it?
I think a lot of people will say that she has successfully changed the narrative on antitrust. She's successfully managed to almost change the definition of what antitrust means. One of the things that she hasn't been successful on is actually winning cases, and there have been sort of multiple cases she's taken on that have really raised eyebrows. I mean, there was one involving Meta and an acquisition of a game. I mean, really not worth very much money at all. And she tried to stop that. I don't think she had any chance of winning that. If you keep losing, the kind of fear that the FTC places in companies like Google and Apple starts to evaporate. And you can very quickly go from a tenacious, young, dynamic person that's really like putting it to big tech, to someone who's out of their depth, who's a bit too junior, doesn't really understand the triaging process of actually picking the right cases. So you have this weird situation in that Lina Khan is a person that everyone is talking about, but at the same time, something needs to change for her. She needs to start winning more cases. Because if she doesn't, it's hard to really point to anything really concrete in her record that is particularly impressive.
Thank you very much. And thanks to you too, Michelle in Washington.
Goodbye.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. If you would like to hear more episodes, search BBC The Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts. Bye.